Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us. We come your way every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We are streamed live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We archive the programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page, and we also link to our guests' websites so you can get the information that you need in order to continue moving forward in your life and living your purpose, fulfilling your dreams. That's right. It's all about you. And don't you forget, it is always all about you. It's all about us. It's all about making this world a better place for all of us collectively. I've often used the analogy of the old lifeboat. Everyone, all 7.5 billion, are welcome aboard the lifeboat with one condition. You really need to let go of the old ways of thinking because they don't work. Look at where we are today. But there are folks who are making inroads into the new ways of thinking, and our guest is among them, and we're going to be talking with her in just a moment. This is also sort of a celebratory period of time in my life and in our family's life. We were able to finally locate a home for a foster German Shepherd that we'd been had with us for 15 months. Seems like a long time to foster, but I know some have them for years. Nonetheless, we were able to find a place for her up in Fortuna, California, in a beautiful ranch north of in the northern part of the California area, and she is doing quite well, happy and healthy, and so forth. And our remaining critters are doing well as well, so we're happy for that. I've reached an interesting milestone. The old speed limit as my birthday just came and went. And reaching that halfway mark between 50 and 60. Okay, really? I don't believe you. I don't believe me sometimes. I still look in the mirror. I'm going, wait a minute, what happened to the 17-year-old that I feel like inside? Very, very interesting to actually observe those kinds of things. Maybe next time you look in the mirror, get a handle on how you feel. And don't feel bad about how you look. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the way we look in the mirror, but sometimes that feeling inside just doesn't match what we see on the outside. It's like, I feel so much younger, so much more vital. But I always remind myself when I'm out doing various tasks, remember, your body isn't 17. Your mind might be, but your body is not. So be gentle. Be gentle. I want to thank our guest for joining us here on the program. We're going to have a lot of fun with Sunny Dawn Johnston, and she is an angel communicator. She's a speaker, teacher, psychic medium, and she also resides, at present anyway, in my hometown, a place that I left because of what they're going through right now, lots and lots of heat. Sunny Dawn, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It is quite a pleasure. You know, the next time you want to have a chat, we certainly invite you to our studios here in Santa Barbara, where it's a whole lot cooler.
Well, if I could come and visit in July or August, that'd be great, because those are the two hard months.
Absolutely. Oh, don't I know it. July, yeah. And August. June isn't so bad. It's still fairly dry and cools off fairly nicely.
Yeah.
But July and August, with that humidity, the monsoonal flow, as they say, although we get a touch of that here on the Central Coast from time to time.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's, you know, it's much pleasanter, in spite of the fact that I now complain about 80-degree temperatures.
Yeah,
it's still,
yeah,
a far side from 120.
Uh-huh, for sure.
Absolutely. Now, it's interesting that we have had on our program folks who have, took an entire month and we talked about the animals that are in our lives, mm-hmm. as I shared just a little bit ago. And we've had folks on talking with those who've passed on and those who are still with us helping us to maybe cope with and better accept the various changes that go on. I've had to experience that 5 or 6 times so far just in the last 10 years or 15 years or so. And it never gets any easier. Even when, in the case of this one shepherd that we were able to find a home for in Northern California, it still feels like a loss. You know, even though you know they're doing fine, they're happy, they're not part of your energetic and your dynamic anymore. But anyway, we've had conversations in that regard. I'm curious as to your level of communication. You communicate with the angels, and I'm wondering what kind of role have they been playing in your life since you began this conversation, these conversations in communication?
Well, you know, I started having experiences. My first experience was with my guardian angel at the age of 13, and it was at a time in my life where I really didn't have even a belief or an understanding around angels at all. So I woke up in the middle of the night and I rolled over and I saw this beautiful, colorful, winged being above my bed. And, you know, and it didn't scare me. It was, you know, most kids at 13 would fly out of their bed and run to their parents. It was very calming and very peaceful and very loving. And I just remember rolling over, and I noticed that it was 1 o'clock in the morning, and I rolled over, and I literally felt so safe and comforted, I just went back to sleep. And it wasn't until I woke up the next morning and I went downstairs, and I thought, okay, wait, that was not normal. I knew I wasn't asleep. I knew it wasn't a dream. And I went downstairs, and I told my mom what had happened, and she said, well, Sunny, that was your guardian angel. And then she went on to tell me that 2 hours earlier at 11 o'clock, she'd come in my room and prayed over me and asked for God and the angels to keep me safe and to surround me in love because she was concerned about my emotional well-being. And so what I learned was, number one, that night I really had awakened to the manifestation of her prayer. And then what that did for me was it said, there's a whole nother world you don't even know about. There's a whole nother realm of beings that can bring you this sense of peace that I certainly didn't feel in the physical world in any way, shape, or form. And so I just started reaching out. You know, I wanted to have more of those experiences. So that experience at 13 opened the door. And once that door was open, it really just expanded, and my interest and my asking for more experiences like that, unfortunately, I also closed the door many times. I wanted to be normal. I didn't want to be weird. You know, I was sitting talking to angels, and then I started seeing deceased people, and we had a ghost in our house, and I had all these experiences, and I just was trying. The whole reason I was depressed and upset and my mother was concerned about me was because I was trying to fit in, and talking to angels and dead people did not help that cause, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think you're absolutely right that we start hearing, or in your case, seeing, it sounds like, these some might call them apparitions. Mm-hmm. Some are going to just, you know, they're going to freak out. And other folks, even though they'd never seen them before, it's like they've been surrounded by the conversation, the stories and so forth. And it's like, oh, this is what it's like. My mother asked me many years ago if I'd ever had any supernatural experiences, and I said, well, if I have, I'm not aware that they were supernatural, because they were just, you know, part of what was happening.
Just natural.
I mean, there are some people that I have met in my life that only I am aware of. Mm-hmm. No one else has ever met them. Not that I ever tried to, you know, bring them home to meet mom and dad or to introduce to other friends, per se. But, you know, they were, you know, it was one of those aspects of my life. And could they have been angels? I have no way of knowing. It's just one of those things that people do experience. Now, in terms of that communication, we talk a lot about intuition on this program. We talk a lot about trusting the still small voice, if you will, and so forth, and all of the other descriptions thereof. And I'm curious as to how you were able to make sense of that between the angels and your own, if you will, higher self or still small voice or intuition.
Well, so, you know, I actually teach a lot on intuition because it's a really, I think it's very important in discerning our, you know, our guidance system. And I think that it's been, for me, I think we spend a lot of time in our heads trying to figure out the difference. And what I've noticed for myself is that sometimes the guidance just comes to me and through me, and that's one way. And then sometimes it's coming from a different force. It's almost like it's brought to me, or I ask for it, and then it comes to me through this higher realm, this higher vibration. That, to me, the way I tell the difference is the way that it feels. And that's difficult to explain to people until they've had the experience. And when they've had the experience, people go, oh, yeah, I know what you mean. But people that haven't had the experience are like, what do you mean? So for me, there's a vibrational difference between spirit guides versus deceased loved ones versus the angelic realm. And each one of those vibrations feels different to me. So that's how I've been able to discern if it's in my own mind and heart and body, or if it's actually outside support or help.
Well, I know that there have been instances in my life, I've shared this before in the program, where I used to bicycle everywhere, and when I was back in Phoenix, I would be taking a ride, and I'd get this prompting to make a right up here. And to make the right was actually sort of taking me out of my way, because I was making a beeline for my destination. And I decided, I'm going to just keep going straight. And it kept getting stronger and stronger. And believe it or not, a half a mile, I actually turned around. I went back to that intersection, and I went up the road as I had been instructed to do, or prompted to do. And I don't know if, you know, what I avoided or didn't avoid, or what chain of events I may have altered or affected. But it was like, okay, no big deal. You know, I'll go this way, and I'll just do this. And it's not like, you know, it's taking me more than, you know, a couple of minutes to do that. And if I'm correct, when we listen to and follow the promptings, my belief is, correct me if I'm wrong, but that this voice, if you will, this guidance is never, ever going to harm you. It might challenge you, but it's not going to put you in harm's way. No. It's trying to direct you along to sort of stay on your path, if you will.
And mine can expand you, possibly. Yeah. You know, it can expand you, but certainly not harm you. And I think the great thing about your story is, and this is something that a lot of people get frustrated with, because there's so much looking for proof. Well, the gift is there wasn't proof, because had you not turned around, you may have very well gotten the proof that you should have listened. So when you do listen, oftentimes you never know why you needed to do that. You know, I have a real quick great story of the opposite of that. About 10 years ago, it was 5 o'clock in the morning, July, end of July in Phoenix, Arizona, hot, hot, hot. And it was 5 o'clock in the morning. I had my pajamas on. I was downstairs making myself a cup of tea. And very, very clearly, I heard in my right ear, "Go out front." And it's 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm not going to go out front. So I have a tendency to argue, you know, so kind of like you did, you know, you're pushing it. So you keep going, and then you turn around. Well, I argued with no one outside of my guidance system, my angelic team, for over 5 minutes. And finally I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm right already. So I went out front, and I just opened the door. And I saw a little boy in a diaper walking down the street. And I was like, oh! So, of course, I ran across the street. I grabbed the baby and looked around. Nobody, there's no adults out anywhere. And so then I started thinking, well, where the hell did this kid come from? You know, I have no idea where he came from. So I couldn't see anybody. So then I'm asking that same voice that said, go out front. Now I'm like, okay, I'm listening. Now what do I do? Nothing. I got nothing. And so I listened, and I got really quiet. I took the baby in the house, and I sat there for like 10 minutes thinking, what do I do? And so eventually I just thought, well, I guess I just call the police. So I picked up the phone to call the police. The voice came back and said, go out front. Well, this time there was no question. I wasn't slow at all, right? I walked right out front, and there was a woman walking up and down the street, and it was his grandmother. And so I walked over there, and I was a little bit protective of him. Like, this kid was just walking up and down the street. I'm not necessarily going to give him to you. So, and basically what had happened is she was my neighbor, kitty corner from me, but I didn't know that she had grandchildren. And in July in Phoenix, you probably know this, a lot of us crack our garage doors because they get so hot inside.
Mm-hmm.
Well, her garage door was cracked, maybe a foot. Well, this baby had woke up. And he'd wanted to go outside the night before and go for a walk, and nobody would take him. And he was not quite two. So he literally climbed out of his crib, opened the door, and walked, got underneath the garage while everybody was sleeping.
Wow.
So that was one of those things that's like, oh, you know, that's why that happened. So,
yeah.
So I got to see the proof when I did listen in that experience. And so I think that oftentimes when we do listen and there is no evidence, that's a blessing. Because the evidence would not have looked the way that the lack of evidence does, meaning you jump in, you know, you get in a car accident or you come across a really serious situation or you are put in harm's way when we don't listen. And there's so many of us. I mean, how many of us have had an experience and we just want to kick ourselves? We're like, oh, man, I knew this was going to happen, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and then there's the next level of this story that you've told where, and this would be pondered after the fact, certainly, you have no idea the role that that child is going to play later on in life. You don't know what impact that individual is going to have on events that we can't even imagine right now. For better or worse, I mean, because I've heard all of the wonderful little stories about, you know, the arguments for and against, for example, abortion, which I never get into an argument or a discussion about, where, you know, well, yeah, they may have just kept alive another Hitler, or they just killed another Mother Teresa, you know, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
In this kind of a situation, here's this little kid out there. Had you not gone out there, the kid could have been hit by a car.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we don't know the role that each individual is going to play.
Absolutely.
But my thought is that each individual should have the opportunity to play it, regardless.
Mm-hmm.
I know that that may sound strange because, again, who knows what this kid's going to grow up to become.
Right, right. Well, and we do have free will, so we do get
that's
to
right.
make those choices. And I think that's absolutely. It's a, you know, we could vision that out, and just, you know, and this person could be someone who finds a cure for cancer.
Yeah.
And could have been dead in, you know, I mean, I literally live 4 blocks from Thunderbird Road, which is a very, very busy, right across the street from a college.
It was busy
very
when
busy
I lived
road.
There. Yeah.
Yeah, very busy road. So literally could have been dead. Could have, a lot of things could have happened. And had I walked out and been 2 seconds later and him crossing the street and somebody hit him, I mean, so many possibilities can happen. And, you know, I really, truly do believe that things happen the way they're meant to. I trust that with all of my heart and soul,
mm-hmm.
Whichever way it turns out. But I know that if I have the ability, if I get a guidance and I don't listen to it, and then there is a series of situations that happen that I feel like I could have had an effect on in a different way, then that's part of my responsibility. I'm the one that has to live with that. So
right.
In my own personal life, what I've chosen to do is and I won't say always because that's extreme, but almost
mm-hmm.
Always listen to that voice. I mean, like literally last week, I have a really dark stairway, and I heard as I took my first step, turn the light on. I took 2 steps, and then I was like, "Dang, I got to turn the light on." And I went and I turned the light on, and my dog's ball was on the 3rd step.
Oh,
I would have stepped on that ball.
Oh.
I could have broken whatever, you know. And I could have just slipped a little bit and had it be not anything major, but something said, and my little, you know, Sunny, you know, my little ego was like, "Yeah, I'm fine." But I took 2 steps, and my spirit was so strong, and it said, "Turn the light on." And luckily, I listened.
And you know, it's fascinating to me to hear you tell me these stories, and at the same time, you acknowledge in spite of all your experience.
Yes.
You
I still have the human part, dang it. Still this human piece. It's like, no, I know better. And luckily, I would say the majority of the time, almost always, spirit wins. You know, that's what spirit wins. I end up listening, but not always initially. And have I gotten better? Absolutely. I mean, I fought it tooth and nail the first 15 years of my awareness around the whole support team that we have in spirit. But in recent years, especially in the last 15, 16 years, as I've been teaching, I really believe that the reason that I teach what I do is because my angels knew that had I not been in that role where I have to show up every day to help guide other people, because walking my talk is so important, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
And so I believe that guidance has really led me to the perfect scenario for me in showing up for myself by also feeling the need to show up for others.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to continue our conversation on these lines as well, because I think this is very important for folks to understand. We're going to talk a little bit more, too, about your role not only as an intuitive or a psychic medium, but also you're a speaker, an author. You have all kinds of neat little things on your website. I love the ceremonial aspect to it as well. There's a course that people can take, and we're going to talk more about that here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World on this summer day, as we are talking with summer days, we have Sunny Dawn Johnston here on the program. We're talking about a lot of different things. She has a website, speaking of a lot of different things and a lot of things going on in her life. She's an angel communicator. I was almost going to say an angelic communicator. You could be considered an angelic communicator with that great smile. You're a speaker, teacher, psychic medium. You also have one of these things that it's fascinating to me, and it's one of the reasons why, and I think my mother is probably very happy about this, more so because I didn't generate a lot of angst or resistance and resentment to it, but I still have an enormous love for the various attributes, if you will, of Catholicism, which I was raised in, the ceremony and the ritual, and all of those things with the incense and the candles, but just those kinds of presentations. And you have a certification course in ceremonialist, if you will.
Yeah,
talk
I
a little
do.
Bit about that.
Well, you know, I've been a minister for, 16 years now, and I kind of came by that just by, I mean, I was guided there, obviously, but I didn't know when I was taking a certification program to be a spiritual counselor that part of the offering was to be a minister as well. And so I started doing shortly after that. I never planned to do anything with it. It was just going to kind of sit in the background, like a lot of us take classes and never use them. But somebody asked me to do their wedding, and then somebody died, and they asked me to do their funeral service. And so it just kind of evolved into this part of my work that at this point I really only do for friends and family and very close clients. But I have been writing ceremonies, weddings, funerals, baby blessings, friendship ceremonies, moon ceremonies, just a variety of different kinds of ceremonies for so long that I would have people constantly say, Sunny, do you have a ceremony for this? Could you help me with writing that? And so finally I thought, well, why don't I just teach people how to do this and they could do it themselves? So about 3 years ago, I wrote a book that I think came out a couple of years ago called The Officiant's Manual, A Wedding Officiant's Manual, and it's to help people actually write wedding ceremonies for themselves if they're a couple getting married and or for the officiant. So it has kind of all the steps. And so that was kind of the first piece. And then the second piece was like, okay, it's time to just start teaching people. So for the last 3 years or so, I teach this class once or twice a year to just help them get out there. And it's, you know, for a lot of people, it's a great way to be of service in the two extremes of life, you know, the new life and new connection with marriage and baby blessings, and then the new life in the sense of the transitioning from physical to spiritual again in the funerals. And for me, I love, I actually love both aspects of that, the ceremony and really honoring people in where they are in their physical life, whether it's moving into the world, moving into a new marriage, or moving into the new world, you know, going back home.
I have to say that one attribute of ceremony and ritual that I want to have incorporated, and we did in our marriage, my present wife and I, we had a ceremony back in Phoenix, and the biggest fun I had, the greatest fun I had, was preparing the yard for the outdoor ceremony, where I hand-built this archway made out of cypress branches. And then we searched for several months for a sword for each of us. And that would be the one thing that I would have incorporated. And because the sword is of such great symbolic meaning in just about every one of these rituals that you might prepare. And then, of course, we picked up a couple of large 6 or 8 foot pine trees that we planted. And, of course, we greened up the backyard. I mean, well, we nearly recreated Ireland right in our own backyard.
Oh, how cool.
And it was fabulous. Strung up a bunch of lights, white lights, all over the place, including all over the arch. And then to really add some wonderful essence, if you will, to the ceremony. And this was really interesting. We had a bagpiper who came to play. And as we were preparing late in the afternoon for the evening ceremony, there were ants all over the place, and we couldn't understand why. And then when the bagpiper went out to stand under the tree where all the ants were, they never bothered him. I thought, wow. Now, I never took the time to look into the symbology in all of that, but I just thought that was, you know, fascinating. But we had such a great time putting that together. And even when we would have gatherings at our home, and we had these beautiful these French doors that opened up into the backyard, and this green, large green area with two giant trees that were shading and all of this. And it was just incredible to do that and to have people come together for all kinds of different things. Sometimes it was just a gathering after a Tai Chi class that they had had. All right, everybody, come on over to our place. We're going to sit. We'll light some incense. We'll light some candles, have some hors d'oeuvres, maybe a little wine or something like that, and just enjoy each other's company. And that in and of itself is a wonderful, wonderful ceremony.
That's beautiful. And let me just give you a little insight about the ant, because I think this is interesting. You said you never got a chance to really look into it, but what ants represent is community and planning and putting kind of your hard work and energy into good things to come.
Mm.
Isn't that interesting?
But I found it even more interesting that they didn't bother the bagpiper.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they were there as almost probably a validation for you of the work that you'd done to pull this together and the community that comes together, because you know ants, they work together. They don't have strength in numbers of one, but as a community, then they have massive strength.
Yeah. That's another aspect of our lives that we don't really look into much, and that is what I'll call the omens, the various living creatures that cross our paths. Or even
Absolutely.
Live with us for a period of time before they move on, you know, physically or spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious as to this aspect of, for that matter, souls or entities, I'm not sure what name to give, who might be sort of hanging around. You know that everything is secure on the bookshelf, and then all of a sudden, you know, something falls off of it, or a book tips to one side or the other, et cetera, et cetera. And I know that my wife has shared with me those experiences in the two-room cottage that we live in, that every once in a while she'll notice that something just disappears. She knows that she put it there, and then suddenly it disappears, and then later it reappears.
They like to have fun with us sometimes.
I've noticed that.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about our ability to communicate. I don't want to say with the dead or what have you, but more in terms of the spiritual entities that we don't physically see. We usually don't physically see.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're always showing us signs, just like that experience with the ants. To help people to understand. Some people would just see them as ants, and they're just there, and why are they there, and they have no purpose or reason, and they don't even give it a second thought. Other people would say, there's some symbology here. There's something to this. Well, that happens all the time in just everyday life. People are living and experience like something moves, or you know, the bookshelf falls down, but it was fine. And a lot of people would pass it off as, okay, well, that, you know, it was just weak, except for you know that it wasn't, or well, I must have put it somewhere else, except for that you know that you did. Like, we explain it away in our heads, where spirit oftentimes is really just trying to give us a message of support or insight or awareness. But if we don't have the awareness around it, then we usually miss the message. So I think that a lot of times it's just easier, especially for people that tend to be a lot in their heads, it's easier to just look at it as, oh, well, that was weird, and then just let it go, or make some excuse for it, you know. I just had an experience 3 days ago where my husband was sailing in Texas in the GT300, which is a 300-mile sailboat race. It's a really long, intense, grueling race, and his best friend, who used to be his sailing partner, his crew, committed suicide 3 years ago, and it was a dream that they had together, and so it was my husband's first time being able to do this, and so, you know, he took some of his ashes, and he has them on his boat, and I have some ashes here, and I lit a candle, and I said, okay, Mike, you know, you make sure you keep an eye on him, you make sure that he's safe, and enjoy this with him. And so I had a thing of candles lit, or not lit, candles that I was going to use to replace as they went out, because I knew it would only last about 6 hours. They were all in the same position. They were all sitting there all day long fine. I came downstairs around probably, I don't know, 11 o'clock in the morning, and or maybe noon, and one of the candles just flew right off onto my bar. And I was like, oh, okay, Mike, I'm listening, you know, like, It was get my attention. There's something happening. Mm. And I went upstairs, and that's when I noticed that my husband, and we found out later, I didn't know exactly what had happened at the time, though, that he had flipped his boat, and actually one of his crew was being rescued by the Coast Guard.
Oh, wow.
It happened about within 10 minutes, let's say. And so that was, number one, a great validation that, number one, he's keeping an eye on him, and everything was fine. They were safe, and they continued the race. But they hit a big storm and a big wave, and the boat flipped, and he couldn't find his crew. So I think that things like that, you know, for one person, they might just pass it off as, okay, well, that's odd that would just fly off. I mean, how does it just fly off? Come
yeah,
on.
Yeah.
But we really have to be present. And most people aren't very present in their lives. You know, they're going through the motions, so it's not a judgment. We're just doing what we're doing. But presence is a whole other level. And when we're very present and we tune into the subtleties, you know, the feelings, the gut sense, the insights, the hair on the back of our neck that stands up when certain things are said, or when we walk into certain rooms, or when we look at certain pictures, that's all signs from spirit. And ordinarily, especially with the angelic realm, it's very subtle. And then sometimes it gets a little bit stronger as we choose or not choose to pay attention. You know, I don't know if you've ever had them, but I've certainly had the spiritual 2x4, I call it, where it's like, okay, Sonny, you're not paying attention. Hello, you know?
Mm. I'm curious about two other aspects as well. One of them isn't so much a direct encounters with spirit, as much as it is what people will talk about as, they'll refer to it as deja vu experience. Now, I was 8 or 9 years old. I had a day, I mean a day in waking time, that every time I seemed to turn around, I was saying, I've been here before. Mm-hmm. And I thought I was going to go nuts because it was like, wait a minute, what is going on? I've finally interpreted that, for me anyway, as the universe is telling me, it's just kind of letting me know, yeah, you're going in the right direction. Just keep right on going. You're fine. It may have been a nudge just simply because I wasn't feeling like I was on purpose and going in the direction that I should be going. And I'm wondering what insights you might be able to share with us in regards to the universe's, shall we say, guidance in those non-voice types of events, in terms of choosing our, or trying to find our purpose in life. And we think like that we found it. And I think maybe that's another misnomer, that a lot of times we think that we have found it and that's it for the duration, when in fact, no, this is just your purpose for right now. There's going to be something else later on that this is preparing you for, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So let me answer it in a couple of different ways. The first thing is, I would agree that oftentimes it's a validation of that you're on the right track and you're right where you need to be. But I also think that a lot of times what has happened in deja vu types of experiences is that that in our unconscious state, we have tapped into, our subconscious knows or has had an experience or has tapped into an experience that we've already seen this, we've already been there, we've already done this on a soul level, and then our consciousness has the experience, and it's like, oh, I remember this. So it's almost like, the way I try to explain it to some people is, it's like if the radio dial's always on 90.3, so you're always hearing 90.3 music. And let's say you go to sleep one night, and the radio dial goes up to 94.6, and then you come back to 90.3 like you always do, but you have some memory of that music on 94.6. And something comes in when you're on your everyday, living your life, and you have an awareness of that 94.6 music, like, oh, I know this song, but you don't know why you know it. That's one of the ways that I think is helpful to explain that deja vu, is you did have an experience, whether it was in the dream state when your spirit was out hanging out and checking things out, or whether it was through a dream state vision that you experienced. Sometimes the deja vus are something that we have over and over and over again, the same exact one. So that's one thing. The second part of that, the purpose piece of it, I think you hit the nail on the head. I just want to drill it in a little bit more, is that I really believe that your purpose is, period, and it isn't a place we're going. So often people are looking at, okay, you know, that's a big question I get asked as a psychic medium and when I do spiritual counseling work, is so what is my purpose so I know what field to get in? Well, your purpose right now might be being to change those diapers of the baby that you just had. And in 2 years, your purpose might be to be working at the grocery store, because that's where you bring light to this particular place. And maybe in 5 years, your purpose is being a writer and an author. And so I think that so often we look at purpose as a end of the rainbow type of thing. It's once I get there, and there's no there to get. You know, it's a constant change and constant growth and constant expansion, and we're never, ever, ever done, because we continue to move forward, and then we pass, and then in my experience anyway, we start again. And so I think that a lot of times when we get into that purpose, so many people struggle so much with that, because it's a way of not feeling good enough. It continues to validate for us that we're not where we need to be. And yet, in every single situation, case that I've ever worked with, for people, Spirit's message is always, you're right where you need to be, and here's options of the direction you can go that can be much healthier. But if they choose another route, they're always still going to show them other ways to get back to center, and that was part of the journey they needed specifically. So, you know, I remember when I was a teenage pregnant mom, and I never planned to have children, and so it was not an exciting, happy time for me. And so at 18 years old, when I found myself in that situation, I remember thinking, there's no way this is part of my purpose. I cannot I couldn't even believe that I was in that situation. And then 5 years later, when I was trying to have babies and I'd lost three, after having my first son, lost three, I remember thinking, there's no way that this is part of my purpose. And then when I finally had another child and really got pregnant with my youngest son and started to lose him, and I thought, there's no way this can be part of my purpose. And now I look at my life and I look at everything that's gone on, and I have quite a colorful life. I see that every single piece in every thread of my tapestry of life is absolutely been purposeful, even and especially those ones that I was like, no way.
So what you're telling us, it sounds like, is that one's purpose doesn't necessarily have a title, i.e., my purpose in life is as a speaker or interviewer,
right,
as opposed to someone else who is to be a healer. We're
right,
talking about being in the moment and
yeah,
on purpose.
Yeah, my purpose is to live on purpose in present moment. And if I'm living in present moment, that's the most purposeful I can be. Because then I can show up in whatever way I need to for myself and whoever else I need to be, and be on purpose. But if I am just walking through my day and walking through my role without any presence, then I'm really not, I'm not experiencing life. And yes, I think we get stuck in on titles very much. So some people will say, well, your purpose is to be an angel communicator and a counselor and a guide, and that is not my only purpose. My purpose is changes at any given hour. I mean, my purpose right now is to be present with you,
mm-hmm,
and to have a conversation with you that hopefully can create some insight or awareness, or touches people in a way that it expands their hearts. But in 2 hours, my purpose is to sit and talk with a friend that's coming over about a wedding cake for my son who's getting married next month. And then this evening, my purpose is to teach classes. So it's constantly changing, and it's not by title.
I think that's a great perspective to have, and I think that it's in line with what we talk about on a regular basis on this program about being in the moment. You know, as we talk on this program, and many of the interviews that we broadcast are recorded, and of course, during that recording, I'm looking at a screen that is displaying the sound waves that have been created from the voices that and the sounds that have been uttered, if you will, and they've been translated and so forth. And there's this line that just sits stagnant where the sound waves emanate from. But on the other side of that line, there's darkness. There's nothing there. This is before the sounds have been made. It's the line, and this was interesting perspective for me to come across, that line that is sitting stagnant, if you will, or stationary, is the now moment. The moment you see, and I don't care if it's a millisecond, it's now the past. If you can see the wave. And so then I started thinking about this in terms of the ear and hearing, or even seeing. If you can hear it, it's not in the now. Now, again, we're talking about fractions of time, but it's still not the now. And that's one of the reasons why I find the conversations that I've had regarding, for example, intuition and telepathy. Because you hear it, but it's not audible.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of an awareness. And that a lot of times it's not necessarily words as much as it is pictures, if you will, or images. Or, I don't know, maybe just a feeling, which has neither words or pictures.
Mm-hmm.
That there's a level of communication we haven't reached quite yet as human beings that will allow us to stay more in the present moment as far as this whole aspect of communication and relating to one another. Where we aren't going to get lost in the past or the future, that, you know, we will really be able to be present and on purpose and fulfilling the things that, you know, we came here to fulfill.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Totally agree. And I bet it sounds to me like you do a lot of work with animals if you're rescuing one for 15 months. And, you know, there's an aspect, I think, with our animals even, that for a lot of people they can relate this way, that there's a telepathic connection with our animals when we're present. You know, when we're not present and they're rubbing their nose against us and we're, like, trying to get ourselves to work or dinner or whatever. Mm-hmm. But when we're present, we notice their energy next to us, and we notice that they're saying, "Hey, I don't have any water." There's a telepathic connection with those that we really stay present with. And I think that a lot of people can relate on that level, that we just know what their needs are, even if it can't be verbally communicated. So a lot of times if people can break it down that way, they go, "Well, yeah, I do know, and I feel like they're telling me this, that, or the other." Well, that works in all areas.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I have to say that there are those times when I haven't been present and they have been out of water, and then when I realize what it is they're trying to tell me and I look over at the bowl, I'm going, "Oh, man." And then, yep, I feel bad because not only was I not listening, but they haven't had water.
Exactly.
You know, and so immediately, of course, I go to their aid, if you will, mm-hmm, and give them what it is that they need, whether it be water, food, or even just attention sometimes. And I love the fact that when we come home from work and we open the back door and we let the two dogs in the house, Angus, who is our two-and-a-half-year-old Black King Shepherd, he is one heck of a talker. I mean, he is, as soon as he comes in, and even slightly before he comes in the back door, he is telling us all about his day, you know, and how happy he is that we're home, and on and on and on. And it's just, and it goes on and on. And he is the type of dog, or animal, I should say, who does not like change. Now, since Bridget has been gone, we've transformed the porch area where she used to stay into a sitting area with a table. The first time he went out onto the porch, he stood there for 2 or 3 minutes barking at the table because it's not supposed to be there.
Uh-huh.
Now, I let him wander around the table to get used to and comfortable with it.
Yeah.
And then he stopped barking at it.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where you start listening to even the way that in this case with dogs, the way that they bark. A high-pitched bark is usually he wants to play or he's barking at a cat. Low-pitched is more of a protective. Both of our dogs will groan when they go in their crates for the evening. Angus will fuss for a little bit, and we can stop it. You know, there's no need for you to be doing that. We're right here. And then he will roll over. He'll put his head down, and then you'll hear this low, exasperated groan, like, "Okay, fine." But again, it's taken time
to
begin to understand and sort of read them, if you will, mm-hmm, or hear what they're saying.
Absolutely. And we can do that. Animals are a great example because people can relate to that, but then we can do that with our angels, with our guides, with our loved ones who have passed. It takes a little bit of time to learn the new language.
Now, we haven't talked about this ahead of time, and so if this is an inappropriate time for me to be asking this question, that's fine. But I'm curious as to, just as a point of reference, are you able to pick up on other individuals, angels or archangels, or I don't know if I should use the term protectors and those kinds of things? I mean, for example, have I got any around me, and what are they trying to do or say or impart, et cetera, et cetera? Is that something that you can do or that you do?
Absolutely. Yeah, and there are different ways that they communicate with me differently with any given person and or spirit person at any given time. So it's not ever the same experience for me. The thing I get with you is I see a lot of white light around you, and when I tune into white light, that generally means Archangel Gabriel. Archangel Gabriel is the angel of communication. It makes sense with what you do, in the sense of a radio show and communicating and expressing and sharing and sharing a message with the world that's important to you. But you're a heart-based person, and I can see that because I can feel a lot of energy from your heart. I think sometimes you can almost be over-giving. And I don't know if that's just to people that are close to you or if it's in general. So with Gabriel's support, I think, is part of how you've been guided into the work that you're doing now, at least, is because there was a message that you needed to share from the heart. That's why you do it. You don't do it just to have a radio show because, oh, I need to figure something out that I wanted to do. It's because it's important to you to get people to offer people the opportunity to maybe open their hearts. And that might not be the right language for you, but that's the way it comes across to me, mm-hmm. is heart-based messages. I also feel like there's a lot of creativity around you. So I see yellow as well, and that's Archangel Jophiel's energy. And so I feel like there's a lot of creativity, and that creativity doesn't feel like it's expressed in the typical way, like, you know, drawing a picture or something. It feels more expressive, though, through your hands, like you like to do things with your hands. Even your landscaping, I guess, might be one of them, you know, like designing and creating that, because it was coming from the heart again. Mm. That heart energy is really important for you.
Mm. And I would say that's pretty accurate in that respect, and even handling little projects that you'd initially look at and say, it's simple. That shouldn't take but a few minutes. But once you start diving into the project, you realize, oh, this is going to be a little more complicated. And as a matter of fact, I was working on one the other day, and I decided that I wasn't going to rush through it. There was no reason to, because, you know, it wasn't like it was an urgency. There was no urgency to it. But I did want to get it finished eventually. I mulled it over. I had been mulling it over for a couple of weeks in terms of, okay, how am I going to approach this? How am I going to construct this particular thing and then put it into position and make sure it's secure and make sure that all of our animals are secure with inside and so on and so forth. So, yeah, that actually has developed over the years, because it used to be, I used to build models as a teenager, but even into my 20s, and I always wanted to build them, and I wanted them built, I wanted them finished. I always wanted to have that completion. It was such a great feeling. But, you know, the models didn't always look that great, because I got my fingers into the glue, and then my fingerprints are on the model and that kind of thing. But nonetheless, I still had a great time and so forth. But it was, you know, sort of a rush. And I remember the last model that I have, up to this moment, the last model I ever built was a model of the USS Constitution, the sailing ship. And I remember back in, 1984, I was working on it. And then we decided we were going to move into an apartment. Well, during the move, what I had been working on, unfortunately, had been damaged. But while I was building it, I was just taking my time, mm-hmm. and carefully painting each of the pieces before I removed it from the runner and so forth. And even rigging the ship with the thread that came with it. I mean, I really wanted this to look just the best that it could look. Like the picture on the box kind of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm. And well, you were present.
Yeah.
You were present is what it sounds like.
And in spite of the fact that it unfortunately was damaged in the move, I still felt good about what I had accomplished, mm-hmm. up to that point. So I
exactly.
knew that, all right, this is the tact I need to take, not just with, construction, if you will, mm-hmm. but really that's, I think, something for all of us to do just in our daily lives because we always seem to be rushing about to and fro doing those things. I mean, you know, you live in Phoenix now, and I'm not sure how long you've lived there. I was born and raised there. So I remember when there was only one freeway going through town, and the I-10 coming up from Tucson was not complete. And so you'd have to take other roads to get to, say, the 17. You had to take regular, we'll call them residential roads, if you will, surface streets, to get out to the 10 that started, I don't know, somewhere close to the California border. Now you've got the 101, which is a big old loop around, mm-hmm. the city. Mm-hmm. You have the 51 that goes up the center of town. Of course, 17 has been there, and it's been modified. And now there's a rapid rail system that goes up and down Central and out to Chandler and Tempe and so forth. I mean, incredible. But again, it just adds to the rushing to and fro, if you will, the moving about, as getting somewhere as quickly as we can.
Yeah, exactly. And then we're not present.
Yeah.
We miss the gifts.
Yeah. I mean, I live 90 miles from Los Angeles, and we drive down there every so often. But I never worry too much about, especially coming home, about how long it takes, because it's going to take as long as it's going to take.
Exactly. Whenever you go to L.A., hey, it's just going to be what it is.
Yeah. And when we have a town called Goleta to the west of Santa Barbara. I mean, and it's almost border to border. There's a small unincorporated space between the two. But a lot of people say, well, I have to go all the way out to, they live in Santa Barbara, and it takes on the freeway, it takes 5 minutes. Go all the way out there? Really? It's, you know, you want to talk about going all the way out if you lived in Scottsdale and you needed to go to Glendale? Now that's going all the way out, because they are far apart. In terms of the other aspects, I mean, you have, and I'm, this is so intriguing to me, the mind, body, spirit practitioner's certificate and the coursework that you have there. Let's talk a little bit about that before we wrap up our program, because obviously that it sounds like it encompasses the total me or you.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, the Mind, Body, Spirit program is a program that I really started because people kept asking me for something. And so I created this program. It's a 5-day intensive that we do here in Phoenix. And sometimes I actually travel and do it. I've done it in Fargo, North Dakota, actually, once.
Really?
And so what it is it's basically so many of the tools that I've learned. So we talk about intuition, and we do some things on ceremony, and we talk about mediumship, and we work on communication and learning to listen both physically to physical beings as well as spiritually, and connecting with our angels, and so it's a mind, body, spirit approach to help support people who are kind of in this field and or wanting to expand their understanding of themselves and others around them, physical and non-physical. So I've done that program since 2009, and it's actually one of my favorites to do because it really gets people in a place of coming from their heart and getting, you know, people can get jobs any day of the week and they do that, and that's great and it serves a purpose. But there's so many people that want to be doing something more on purpose and that they feel has more value. So this class, the tools, are beneficial just individually for yourself. And then what we find is that a lot of people that end up taking this program then either add those to, you know, their psychotherapy practice or their acupuncture practice or their massage therapy practice, or they expand their own, they begin to open up to a whole new business being of service to other people in some form.
Hmm. You are also, if I'm not mistaken, you're also a musician.
Nope, I'm not the musician.
You're
God,
not the
I
musician.
I wish I was, though. I have a musician that actually travels with me all over the U.S. When we did my first book tour in 2012, we actually did 111 events in 11 months.
Oh.
And so she writes music to support my teaching. So, like, when we're doing work with the angels, she writes different songs about the angels, and then that moves the energy to really bring them in, because it's all about vibration. And then when we do grief work, she's got some songs for grief or whatever the topics. You know, I teach on a lot of different topics. And so she's a musician. I am a singer, but nobody wants to hear me sing. Let's just put it that way.
Well, the only reason I brought it up was because I did see the one video where you made reference to that fact, and yet you kept, in different shots, you kept singing.
Yep. But, I will. I love to sing, but most people do not want to hear me.
But that is an aspect of the fun and the joy that you find in life, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I tell people, because people really, I mean, a lot of people tease me and they'll say things, even people that don't know me are like, oh my God, what is that? You know, I'm not kidding. It's happened. But I really do. I sing with my spirit. And I love to sing and I love that form of expression, but I wasn't, you know, I was given a lot of gifts, but that wasn't one of them. And I don't care. You know, I think that it's important for us to be who we are and to express ourselves in ways that feel good to us. And for me, certainly Well, I can't say that because I just went up on stage in Chicago and sang in front of 1,100 people. So I was going to say, certainly I'm not going to go up and force people to listen to me, but that was a unique experience. But I just think, you know, a lot of times we just got to get over ourselves, get over our egos and what other people are going to think, and just live life and be joyful and be kind to ourselves and others and have fun.
I think that's a very good message for each of us to take in, because again, there are some who have, you know, quite incredible musical talents and voices and so forth. Others who are quite eloquent in their speech and so on and so forth. I mean, there are just so many opportunities, and others who can write incredibly. And you really need to kind of just say, you know, it doesn't matter what other people think. I have to do this. I've just got to do this.
Yeah, it's really an internal drive. You know, there's something, when I first started writing, I didn't want to write my book, and actually a publisher came to me and asked me to write. And so then I was like, ah, dang, I'm not a good writer. You know, I quit school when I was 15 years old, and I didn't have any college experience besides a couple classes I just took because I was interested, because I got pregnant at 18, and so I didn't have the understanding of really a lot to do. You know, I didn't take any advanced courses ever. So when I first was looking at, oh, I'm going to write a book, I thought, oh my gosh, I don't even know how to do this. I mean, I can talk, but writing is a whole different animal. And I just realized, you know what, Sunny, you need to get over yourself. You have a message that there are a lot of people that it could help them to heal, and it could teach them how to treat their children differently, and it could cause them to open up their hearts and maybe not do some of the things that you've done. And so I really got into the place of, you know what, I have a message, and the message isn't going to be as eloquent or prolific as some people's, but it will touch those that need to. And so I think that's important for all of us to remember in whatever work we do. I don't care if we're the garbage collector, or, you know, or the radio host, or a writer or a teacher or whatever it is. We just have to be in our spirit and trust that the messages that we get and what we do, if we have integrity in our work and really walk our talk, that's what matters. And the people that are going to align with it are going to align with it. We don't have to do much to do that.
Exactly.
Just be ourselves.
Exactly. Be yourselves. Sunny Dawn Johnston is my guest, and we've been talking for a while here about, well, just all kinds of different things, and we encourage you to check out her website by the same name, sunnydawnjohnston.com, and we will be linked to her on our website at richarddugan.com, and we'll also make the archive available as well at the same location on the radio show's page. Sunny, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Before I let you go, I have three final questions for you.
Okay.
The first is, who is Sunny Dawn Johnston?
She is a spirit embodied.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Man, you leave the tough ones for the end. I think I want to live my life as in truth and be who I am. And by doing that, my hope and intention is that I can inspire others to do that for themselves, in whatever that looks like for them.
And who inspires you?
You know, I've been asked this question before, and I get inspired by the everyday person who does the right thing when nobody's looking. I get inspired by seeing acts of service be done with no payoff, just because it feels good or it feels right. I get inspired by a smile on somebody's face. So really, it's the simple things to me. I don't have a person that I look up to that inspires me. It's more of humanity in a loving, kind, compassionate place that inspires me.
Hmm. And by the way, I did happen to catch on your website that you were named after your two grandfathers, and I'm so glad they weren't named George and Bill.
That'd be terrible, wouldn't it?
I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program. It's been a pleasure to have you here, and we hope that should you find your way here to Santa Barbara and the coast, we'd love to have you in studio to continue our conversation.
You got it. That'd be awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
You're sure welcome. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Just remember that if you haven't caught the entire interview, there is an after view, and you can hear that at the website, richarddugan.com, on the radio shows page. And I'm Richard Dugan. Until next time, love Talal.